No, you could do better than that. How you guys feeling? All right, so it must be really nice to be sitting right now, right? After all that walking, how are those calves doing? They burning? They burning? All right, radical, radical. All right, so I need you guys to do what we need to do. I'm going to point to you, and you're going to yell turtle time when I do this. So one, two, three.
Turtle time!
No, almost. One, two, three.
Turtle time!
The loudest you've ever done it. One, two, three.
Turtle time!
Ladies and gentlemen from Project Nerd, it's your moderator, Iggy, everybody.
Chair's not moving. What's up, guys? Let me get my turtles set up here. How many people still got their original turtle toys? That's still I kind of have. Who still got like the van? Everybody remember that pizza shooter? Like that would be sold as a weapon these days with how fast it shot that pizza out, right? Perfect. And we were still, I was trying to remember, I think this one had the parachute and the fan in it and everything like that. Awesome. Okay. Well, I have some cool stuff for you. So before I introduce who we're here to see, if you ask a question, we're going to have you put on these cool turtle masks, all right? So we'll have a microphone come to you, ask a question. After you ask the question, feel free to get up and come here and grab one of your favorite turtles here. So we have a number of them, so we should be good, all right? But let's quit hearing from me. We're ready to hear from Mr. Kevin Eastman, everybody. How are we doing today?
Cowabunga!
Yeah.
Awesome to be here with you folks. Colorado Springs. Wood, wood, wood.
Tough questions to start.
Okay.
Which Ninja Turtle are you?
Raffaello.
Raffaello. Okay, that's a good answer. I like it.
Donanaro. Like Raffaello, Donanaro.
Yeah.
What's the other one?
Picasso? All right. Which villain do you like to fight the most?
Oh, man. Krang, I guess. 'Cause it's so
Krang?
I love
okay.
Krang. Bebop and Rocksteady, I could take them on both at the same time.
No, all right. And you have to, you are a Ninja Turtle. You have to fight 100 2-foot shredders or two 100-foot shredders. Who are you fighting?
Oh, man, I'd go with the small ones. I have a better chance I could probably outrun them.
Sorbo, I asked the same about Hercules. He said he can kick them. He can kick the little ones, right?
Kick so the little kick ones them. And then run. Kick all and right. run. Kick and run.
So those were the tough questions. We're going to get you to the easy ones now. All right. I'm sure you all have a lot of questions to ask, so I'm going to turn straight to you. Raise your hand. If you see me make eye contact, I'll keep up with you. If you need some time to think about it, I have plenty more questions as well. Yes. We had right behind you. We got the gentleman back there, too, so we have a few ready to go. Yeah, right here.
So which one is your, like, all-time favorite? Like, is there just one, or?
Well, it's always tough to choose because, you know, it's like for both Peter and I, we feel like they're our children, you know, so you hard to choose a favorite. But Michelangelo was the first one drawn, so I sort of go, like, if I have to choose one, I'll go with the firstborn, so I'll go with a Mikey. But, you know, it's tough to choose. It really is because we do love our guys.
And you gotta come put a mask on now, man. You gotta rock your Ninja
Turtle. You need to pick your favorite.
Yeah, so you're gonna end up picking your favorite and let him know, right? Oh, Mikey, there we go. I'm gonna call it out for everybody to know too. All right, awesome. So we had another question. Where did the microphone? Oh, you're back there already. Perfect. So back there.
What's your favorite TV series of the Ninja Turtles?
Gilligan's Island. Oh no! Of the Turtles. I'm sorry. You know, the first season, the first series was, because it was the first one, I feel like that's, we're working off the original black and white comic book, was intended to an older audience, so it was kind of edgy, and so when Peter and I softened it up and made it specifically for younger kids, we knew we were doing it. That's where so many cool things came out of it, like the different colored bandanas, which was a great Peter Laird idea. We could tell them apart more easily. I love the introduction of Bebop and Rocksteady, things like... Krang, of course, with Dimension X, and so there was so many great memories. We worked on because back in those days, Peter and I had full say over anything that was done with the Turtles or not done with the Turtles. So we worked on all 300 of those episodes, and man, we had such a great time. The writers were great, and that's back when they were still hand painting a lot of the animation cells, which was fantastic. So yeah, I would probably go with that one. But fast forward to I think the Nickelodeon, the 2012 series was specifically cool. Yeah, it was great. No, it was great because Ciro Neely, who was the creative executive for that series, I mean, this guy grew up in Philadelphia. His dad owned a pizza place called Antonio's. So he grew up as a kid eating pizza, drawing Ninja Turtles. And when he took over the series, he really chose bits and pieces of his favorite turtle universes from the Black and White series, the Mirage series, from the original late 80s, early 90s series. He picked a number of great characters from the 2000 series, kind of put them all in a blender. But that's where they created Ice Cream Kitty, which is the most important character in the Turtles universe, right? Ice Cream Kitty, you know Ice Cream Kitty? I did the voice of Ice Cream Kitty. It's a joke, so it's like it's a cat made out of ice cream. It was awesome.
It's a very important character, right? Yeah.
He didn't talk, he just meows.
Yeah, and that first run was, if I remember correctly, it was like 9 years, 10 seasons, 193 episodes for that summer around there.
Yeah, no, it was insane. I think we counted, like, because we went from...
We had the miniseries first, too, yeah. That led into it, right?
Yeah, that's right. It was like 19... the first five episodes ran between Christmas 1987 and January 1st, 1988. And that was the first five part. And then we went into 13, eight more to make 13 for that season. And I think by the time we wrapped up in 1997, I thought there was something like, we had a list of 288 some odd shows. Because it was syndication, then it went to CBS, and then holy crikey, it was a lot.
Right. I still watch them. I don't know.
That's right. Yeah, it was like
they were everywhere. Yeah,
they were everywhere.
Awesome. And when you find time, if you want to now, you can come grab a mask for sure. All right, questions. I don't know where the microphone is. We have so many hands. I'm putting this on you. It's not my responsibility. Pick who first.
It's like,
I think we got a little one back there.
Why did you give the different turtles different colors?
That's a great question. When we first did the comic books, 1984 was the first comic books. They were printed in black and white. And even in those days, they had just a two-color cover. But the first time I did a painting of them, it was for one of the role-playing games in Turtles issue 5. Because the interiors were black and white, I never thought we needed to tell a different color to tell them apart. So I did them all with red bandanas. And then when we started developing the animated series, the cartoon, the people in the animation company and at the same time the toy company, they go, well, how do you tell them apart? And we're like, you know, the weapons, duh. but they said, no, it would be great to come up with a way to make them more individual. And so Pete said, well, why don't we try different colored bandanas? So we chose carefully in that Leonardo was selected as blue because it's kind of a more leaderly kind of katana. It's kind of a royal samurai feeling color. Raphael we kept as red because he was our Wolverine or our hothead, so we kept him as the original red. Michelangelo, orange, it's a very silly color, so it just made sense to have him orange. And then Donatello's weapon is a bow staff, which is traditionally a weapon of a monk or a more pacifist type of character. So Donatello, we selected purple to keep him separate. So that was the main reason, so we could tell them apart. And even back in the early days, they were weren't sure if the... colors would work, so they put a big initial on their belts. So you get L for Leonardo. No, but so that was the reason. So yeah,
awesome.
Good question.
Don't forget to get your mask.
Yeah, come up and grab a mask. We got each turtle.
Which one? Which one's your favorite?
Michelangelo.
Awesome.
All right, up here.
Hi.
Hello. How are you?
Doing well. So drawing blood is this like rad pseudo autobiographical comic that I love.
Thank you.
If you could pick a celebrity to start writing a rad pseudo autobiographical comic, who would it be?
Say that again. What was the last part?
If you could pick any celebrity to start writing their own like rad pseudo autobiographical comic, who would it be?
That's a good question.
It's a really good question. What's that? No, I think. Obviously, we did a show last weekend, and my cousin was there, Jason Momoa. So he's kind of an obvious choice. You can laugh, trust me. No, my wife was like, I'm getting my picture with Jason.
I was like, your Wikipedia page just got updated related to Jason Momoa.
No, I think Ben Bishop did a little. Ben Bishop is a series artist on this project we're doing called Drawing Blood, which is this. It's kind of a semi-autobiographical story, but we call it a completely fictional true story of this guy named Shane Bookman and his brother Paul, who came up with these characters called the Radically Rearranged Ronin Ragdolls, which is three samurai cats that grew up in above a sushi restaurant in Queens, all named after famous animators, Otomo, Tezuka, and Miyazaki. And so the story is based around Shane, who had some success, then had a big crash landing from his success, and is trying to find his creativity. So it's just a way to, it's like, you remember the movie Spinal Tap? Spinal Tap was kind of a play. So this is all set in the world of comic books. So we're doing kind of our Spinal Tap version of, what might be sort of kind of me in that kind of universe. So we were able to do a lot of really funny things. But Ben did a little mock-up of Adrian Brody as the character with a little Shane Bookman mustache and stuff. So he'd be great. And he's a fantastic actor as well. So good question. Awesome. Thank you.
What mask you want?
All right.
So, going back to the very beginning, the original creation of the Turtles, why Turtles? Why Renaissance Masters? What was the process there that you guys went through to make those decisions?
Oh, great question. It really started as a joke in that Peter and I shared a studio, which actually was the name of the studio was called Mirage Studios because it was a mirage. It was our living room. We didn't have a studio. That's true. And so one night, because Peter and I we both write and we both draw, so we were, and we had different strengths, and so we were teaming up, unify and stronger together and submit samples and try to get work from all these different companies, which we just got, stacks of rejection letters, which is fine. That's part of the process. So one night I had this idea. It was November 1983, and it was this dumbest idea. I thought to myself, if Bruce Lee was an animal, what would be the stupidest animal he would be? So it was sort of fast-moving martial artist, slow-moving turtle. And so I did this sketch, which is actually the turtle that's on the hat here. You can see it come by the booth later. We get the hats and some shirts. And I put it on his desk, and I said, this is going to be the next big thing, ha, ha, ha. And he laughed, and he did a sketch changing some things in the design. And I thought, well, if we got one, why not a group? We all love X-Men and Fantastic Four and, Avengers and whatnot. So I did a sketch in pencil of four turtles, each with a different weapon and mask on and standing in this dramatic pose. And I penciled in Ninja Turtles as a logo, as a title. And so when he actually inked it in, he added Teenage Mutant to the title. And we were just like, yeah, this is the dumbest thing we've ever seen. we need to come up with a story that tells how these guys got to be Ninja Turtles. And that's when we started working on the origin story, and we went through a number of things like the names. But first, we were like, still trying to figure it out. We said, we need a really good bad guy. And the Shredder actually came from doing dishes in that Janine, Peter's wife, would cook dinner and would do dishes. And Peter was washing one night, and I was drying, and those rectangular metal cheese graters? So I was drying the inside of this cheese grater, and I sort of had it like this, and I'm like, holy smokes, could you imagine a bad guy with one of these on each arm? He would, literally shred your skin off, right? And Peter was like, yeah, Shredder! So we had our bad guy. And then it was pretty you have to keep in mind that we were quite sure that, Peter, myself, a few of our cousins, maybe some other relatives, would probably be reading this book. So we just wrote it for ourselves. We wanted to write a comic book story that we thought was kind of funny and that we liked. And so then we get to the names, and we were thinking, maybe some traditional Asian names is appropriate for the historical aspects of the Asian culture and the characters. And we're like, we're talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, for Pete's sake. It's going to be sillier. So traditional American names, not stupid enough. And I grew up as a huge fan of history, especially art history. In my senior year in high school, I did a painting at my school, Westbrook, Maine. Go Blazers, Westbrook, Maine. And it was my tribute to Leonardo da Vinci. And it had the Mona Lisa and all of this stuff. So I just blurted out. I said, how about something as dumb as like Leonardo and Michelangelo? And Pete laughed immediately, so we were on to something. So we added Raphael, and then we had about a two-week discussion on Donatello, because Donatello was a sculptor from that period, but I liked the sculptor named Bernini better. So we almost had Donatello named Bernini. But we went with Donatello, which I think was a good choice. But no, it was really, you know, we borrowed heavily from some of our favorite themes and comic books. Did I win? No, sorry. But no, we just put a lot of what we loved about comics into this one idea and thought there'd only be one issue. So
there you go. Come get a mask, too. So, and then we're back here for this question right in the aisle.
So have you ever thought of making something like some Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like a different animals, like for say Teenage Mutant Ninja Kangaroos or something like that?
I like it.
Well, what was funny was, you know, when the Turtles came out in 1984, it was popular for a couple different reasons. Nobody had really done black and white comic books that became successful. And it was a way that, you know, there was a lot of other artists out there, like Peter and I, that were trying to break into the business. And it was just, you know, you had Marvel, DC, a few other smaller companies, and it was really hard to break in. And so when we started self-publishing, a lot of people realized, like, well, if those two goofballs can do it, then we can do it, too. And so there were a lot of parodies. And I think the first one was Adolescent Radioactive Black Belt Hamsters. That came out first. Remember that one? Then there was Mildly Microwave Prepubescent Gophers, Something Something Gangrene Kangaroos. There was so many. There was even Marvel, I think they backed out of it at the last minute, but they were going to do one called Adult Nucleus Samurai Elephants. So we counted at the height of the parody of a parody, because we kind of parodied the turtle, so... the parodies of the parodies. There's about 21 adjective noun comics out in the by like 85, 86. So, but within the Turtle universe, we added lots of characters that were different mutations and still are. You know, even today, the IDW series, we're still adding mutated characters. In fact, we just added a girl turtle to the series. So, to check that out.
Awesome. Come get a mask too.
Would you like a mask, sweetie?
Yeah. Which one do you want? Who's your favorite?
Something to match your blue hair.
Or see up here?
It's Leo. Yep. I'm sorry. Donnie, Leo, Raph, Mikey.
Mikey?
There you go.
The kids always pick Mikey, right? All right. I think we're
going to. Can't go wrong with Mikey.
All right. What's your weapon of choice and your favorite side character?
Weapon of choice. What was the last part? I just missed it.
Side character.
So it'd be side character. Oh, man. I don't know. You know, it's like, it's funny. It just made me think of when Peter and I first did the comic book and it first started becoming successful, we would do interviews like local newspapers and even some local news stations. And they would be like, you know, you have these superhero characters that are set in New York City. So you guys must be from New York and they do martial arts. So you must be black belts. And we were like, we live in the woods in New Hampshire. I've never been to New York City, and if a black belt means I've watched every Bruce Lee movie 10 times and I'm a black belt. But years later, I actually studied martial arts, and I liked a lot of different martial arts. And funny, one of my favorite weapons was the bow staff. I really liked it because it was also good in the video games. Remember, if you were Donatello, you had that reach, right? So for the NES, but I like the bow staff because a lot of weapons. But I've trained with scythes, which are nice, but scary. What's yours?
Size. I have
you have scythes. But you know, when I was like, anybody try nunchucks? I can't not hit myself in the head with them. I don't know. It just must be me. But favorite side character. You know, of course, we brought April into the Turtle family in issue 2. But one of my favorite side characters was Casey Jones, because Casey was, you know, this character that I had this idea for. I wanted to have Raphael meet someone as crazy as him, and maybe you'd sort of make him look inward a little bit, like, hey, tone it down a little, you know. And so I had this guy with a cocky mask and this sweats and stuff, and he had two baseball bats. And Pete came up with the idea of adding the golf bag with the different weapons, hockey stick and all that, which was absolute genius. That's how it was great working together like that. But I'd say Casey was my favorite side. Yeah.
Awesome. What mask you want? I heard the size when you said the size, which is good because now all four turtles have been picked.
Yes.
There you go. All right.
So we're really enjoying the crossovers you're doing right now. We're reading the one with Batman currently. I was kind of curious, do you, how does it feel? Do you have a favorite crossover that you're doing? And will we ever see the any characters from the heavy metal days come in?
Oh, awesome. Good question. Thank you. no, it's been fun with the crosses that we've done lately. It's been Ghostbusters Turtles, which has been a blast. I love Ghostbusters like we all do. And then the Batman Turtle crossover, thanks to you guys liked it as much as I did. Freddie and James did such a great job that I just finished, actually before I came here, the last 8 pages, because I'm working on this particular one with Freddie. I finished my last 8 pages of issue 6 before getting on a plane and flying here. Like just on deadline. There's a lot of Daredevil in the Turtles history, the Turtles origin story. I don't know if you guys know that. There's like, you guys ever watch the Daredevil series or read the comics? There was, just for you, those of you that haven't, in the Turtles origin, there's a truck carrying nuclear waste barreling through the streets of New York City. A blind man steps into the street, and this young man jumps out and saves that blind man from getting hit by the truck. Truck slams on its brakes, and this nuclear canister falls out of the truck and hits this young boy near the eyes, which is Daredevil's origin. And I love Daredevil. It was my favorite comic growing up, but they never said what happened to the canister after it hit young Matt Murdock. And so in the Turtles' origin, it just continues bouncing down the street, and this poor boy is standing near a sewer opening holding a glass terrarium with 4 turtles, and the canister hits that, and it all goes into the sewer where there's a rat. In Daredevil, Daredevil's mentor is a guy named Stick. Turtle's mentor is Splinter. In the Daredevil series, they fought an evil clan called the Hand. We have the Foot. So, luckily, Marvel didn't sue our pants off. they probably could have, but I think it was done in loving homage enough that they didn't do us. And there was a second part of your question. What was it? Heavy metal characters. Daredevil would be a great crossover. I'd love to do that. A lot of fans write in and want to see a Turtles Deadpool crossover, which I think would be hilarious. Turtles Wolverine. That'd be good. And something from heavy metal. I love the Turtles. I think that our fascination with outer space and that kind of stuff was evident like in the early, but it was more of like a passion for Star Wars, because early in the Turtles history, we took them into outer space to discover more of the secret of the ooze, that kind of stuff. But no, I still work. I love heavy metal. So I don't know if we'll see that kind of crossover. Nickelodeon owns them now, so they're a little more particular than I am. So.
Heavy metal's not quite on the same. Right, yeah. Come get a mask. All right, and then I think we're back there for a question.
Yeah. Daredevil is my favorite as well, so that's awesome.
Sweet. Oh, awesome. So, Shredder. That's awesome.
So when you do these collaborations, you have the movies made, stuff like that,
yep.
How much input do you actually get in that, and how hard is it for you to let go of your ideas of what it should be to let somebody else take those reins, especially it's your baby. You know, these they're yours. You're
yep.
basically God of that universe. So.
it's an interesting dynamic, because it is sort of even early in the early days of the Turtles that we were used to, say like I was a huge fan of Daredevil, and there would be different artistic teams on Daredevil, some I like more than others. I mean, I still remember reading Daredevil when they introduced this new penciler named Frank Miller, and I'm like, oh, this guy's pretty good. And then, like, the rest of us, we watched him blow on Rhines for the next 30 issues. And so there's some series you like more, some you like less. And we were doing some of that when Peter and I got busier with the Turtles entertainment side, working more on the cartoon shows and the movies and that stuff. We still wanted to keep the comic line going, but we ended up bringing in guest artists and guest writers and things. And it was fascinating to Peter and I to see what they saw within our characters that we didn't or we hadn't explored yet. And a lot of that was done in the animated shows. I think we did 62 comics in the Mirage initial run of comics, but we did 200 plus animated shows in roughly that same time period. So it was like a lot of exploring different ideas and different characters and building different Turtle universes. So it wasn't as dramatic as you think is letting go, but when we were in full control, like the first movies and those shows, we had full say over what it was to be done and what was not to be done. But then it feels like after that, when you look at the 2000 series, which Pete oversaw directly, which is one of my favorite series, it's the edgy version of the Turtles. Kevin Monroe, who did the 2007 animated movie, he was a Turtle fan, so he sort of brought what he loved about the characters to it, and we had no say in it per se, but he did such a wonderful job. And I would say, you know, even with the Nickelodeon series and everything I've seen with the Turtles, some I like less, most of them I like more. I did consult on the two live-action movies, which were not necessarily my favorite versions of the Turtles, because I felt they took away some of the innocence and the charm with having a 7-foot Raphael that's bulletproof. It's a little, you know, but I like the fact that at the same time we get to see Bebop and Rocksteady on the big screen, and Krang and things like that. So those, I'd say, I didn't like them as much, but there were some good qualities in them. So, no, it's you know, even in the early days, Peter and I would work. We were working sometimes 90, 100 hours a week, you know, because we wanted full control over our characters. But you have to keep in mind, too, that it was in 1988, before the Turtles took off, we were drawing 90% of the time and doing 10% of the time was taking care of business. By 1989, it was a complete opposite. We were suddenly only drawing and creating 10% of the time, and the rest was, and it's not a complaint. We were managing our characters, our creation, taking care of our babies and our children. We did it for 15 years, and at some point, both Pete and I were like, you know, we just got to get back to what we loved about, which is creating, and then let them go. And it's not easy, but it's a process that it was. But no, I'm so happy with some of the versions, especially the 2012 animated series. And moreover, I worked directly with Tom Waltz, who's a genius writer on the IDW comic series, which is Tom's a genius. And so we're putting out issue 100 in November. And so thanks to your support, we've done. Spent the last 9 years doing 100 issues of this comic. That's just fantastic. And that's the closest we'll ever come to the Eastman and Laird. We'll never replace that in any way, not intended to, but it's the same edgy, kind of tonally, intended for an older audience type of idea. So we're having a blast with that. So, but good question. Thank you.
All right. You can come get a mask, too.
Yes.
All right. I think we're right here.
Yeah, so you had mentioned the introduction of the female turtle, and technically, I guess nowadays would be considered the fifth turtle. What are your takes on the fifth turtle, including your ideas of what you and Laird had back in the day with Kirby, and ongoing going forward with Slash and then Venus? Who would you consider to be the true fifth turtle, and whatever happened with Kirby, and why didn't you proceed with that?
No, it's a really good question too, because it was a very interesting situation, and we were developing. We were working on a fourth movie with New Line Cinema, who put out the original three. And the big reveal in that fourth movie was we named after our hero Jack Kirby. We wanted to add a fifth turtle, and so we developed this male character, male turtle. That, you know, there was another turtle in the bowl, and it went further down the stream and was raised differently. And it was without getting into too much detail. We liked this, and then that movie never went ahead. And so shortly thereafter, Chaim Saban, who does the Power Rangers, and bought Fox Kids, and they wanted to do a Turtles live-action series. And so we developed the Turtles live-action series with Kirby going to be, that's going to be the big thing. And the live-action series was to bring a fifth turtle in. Margaret Lesh, who was running the program, all the programming at that time, decided it would be better to do a female turtle. And we didn't disagree in that we love strong female characters, you know, Sarah Connor and Ripley and so many others, and April was our main, but it just felt like it was too much of a force fit the way it was being presented. But we made the best series we could, and it didn't work. A lot of people thought it was it didn't feel right. It was sort of like, you know, hey, they're just trying to, it seemed like a more than a gimmick than an actually story-driven point. And so fast forward to from that with Venus DeMilo, when Tom and I were working on the IDW comic series, in issue 51, we introduced a character named Jenica, who is a foot assassin, which then Splinter takes her under his wing and sort of shows her there's another way to do things, and almost father-daughter-like trains her. So she becomes part of the family, and we were going to have her in for about 10 issues. But she became so popular so quick that we kept her as an important part of the Turtle family. So we had, you know, Casey, April, Jenica, that kind of thing. And so around issue, and Tom always wanted to add a female turtle because he felt it was, you know, it's you know 2018 for Pete's sake, you know, and it's strong female characters are all around us. We love them, and we wanted to do something, but it has to be, with everything we did with the IDW comic series, it has to be story first. It's nothing's forced. We're not going to kill a character to build sales. We're not going to do anything that we think is gimmicky. It's all about the story. And so we started thinking around issue 65, 66, it's like, you know, maybe by the time we get to issue 85 through 90, we can include Bill Jenica into this character as the fifth turtle, and very similar origin to the She-Hulk. And so it took that long to get the story just right to make it work. And it was one of those Hail Marys that we felt good about it, we felt right about it, we liked the story, we put it out there, and then it came down to you guys either, you know, writing us, you know, nasty letters or positive letters, and fortunately it's all been positive, and so we're happy to have her part of the family. So thanks. It's a good, really good question. And so hopefully she'll be here to stay for a long time. So.
Awesome. All right. You can grab a mask if you want. And then I think we're over here for another question.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Hi.
Leo.
So Rob Paulsen is just an amazing voice actor.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you thought he happened to be a better fit as Raphael or Donatello.
Man, that's tough because he was, you know, it's a really tough thing. And he was one of the guys that I was so glad that did make the transition over into the new series. But to me, it was, you know, Townsend Coleman and Cam Kennedy and Barry. And I mean, those guys, those were the original voices of the Turtles. Those are the ones that brought our characters to life. So it was hard for me at first to really think of him other than Raphael until you start watching. And it took a while to get used to it because I was so used to him as Raphael in the first series because it was the original voices. But I'm glad that he, you know, he came in and he worked. Donatello in the new series. It's funny because you meet Rob and he kind of reminds me of Donatello. You've met him, right? Yeah. He's kind of tall and lanky and stuff, and he has that voice. He's great. So, but no, he works great. Actually, it was a funny. You guys know who wrote the theme song for the first Turtle cartoon series? You know that? Do you know a guy named Chuck Lorre, who did Big Bang Theory and Two and a Half Men? When he first started in Hollywood, he was a jingle writer. He used to write commercial jingles and things like. He was like he wrote the Turtles theme song for that. Yeah, that was too funny. It's funny. I had forgotten about that. I remember. Somebody had reminded me of it, then like 5 or 6 years ago, we'd met a turtle fan, a guy named Nyambi Nyambi, who worked on Mike and Molly. He was friends with Chuck Lorre, who did that show, and he brought it up again. I'm like, oh my God, I forgot about that. And so we went up and met him, and it was funny because he said he was just starting out and raising a family, and to his daughter and their kids at school, he was a real hero because he's the guy that wrote the turtle song. You know, now look at him, you know. It's like, we all have to start somewhere.
There you go. You could come grab a mask as well. I think we have up here and back there. And, oh, she's already got one lined up way back there, too.
We'll get to you, Dave. Don't worry. Either way. Yeah.
So
we got Donatello Leonardo. There we go. Perfect.
Who's your favorite?
Sorry about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
There we go. Okay.
Sorry. So you kind of answered a question I had earlier, but I still figured I'd ask. Are you a really big fan of the old live-action Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies?
Yes.
Because those are actually some of my top favorites.
Yeah, no, that's, you know, honestly, it's like, even out of the first three animated series, it was the first one to me is the best one. It will always be the best one, because not only because it was the first one, but it was like the perfect storm of Steve Barron was a tremendously talented director, and he really loved, he created the balance between the edgy, dramatic intensity of the black and white comic books and the comedic humor of the early animated series. Jim Henson made those costumes work in every way, shape, and form. I think most if not all of the technology that brought those to life between the puppeteers and the people that had to wear them was designed specifically to bring them to life, which was fascinatingly mind-blowing because, you know, we were so lucky, the combination of to run the mechanics to make the mouse move and all the stuff, all the servos and all the metal things, the connectors. The only way you could do it was this giant battery pack, and the turtles had a shell, so you could actually put this thing in their shell, so otherwise it wouldn't have worked. But they were Todd Langdon, who wrote the final screenplay. There was, you know, Elias Koteas as Casey, Judith Hogue. I mean, it was a perfect storm, and so we loved it, and without a doubt, that was perfect.
I think the third one alone for Casey Jones chasing samurais around New York City, like that right there.
That was so wacky.
You can come grab a mask when you get a chance, and meanwhile, we're just going across the aisle there, and then we'll have a few questions back up towards the front again, yeah.
Let's say Paramount was to say, Kevin, we want you to write and direct the next TMNT movie.
Yes.
What would you do, and how would you approach it, and what, if would you use CG or the puppets again?
Great question. No, I've mentioned that to Paramount about 16,000 times that I would love to do that. But I would definitely go back. I feel like, and it's funny because before the 2014 Michael Bay movie came to be, I'd worked on a development of a movie that was written by a guy named John Fusco, who we worked together on the script. And John Fusco wrote movies like Young Guns and some really good stuff, solid stuff, that stories that made sense. Crazy, I know. But his approach was to redo the first 1990 Turtle movie, similar to what J.J. Abrams did in The Force Awakens. When he did The Force Awakens, he took all that we loved about A New Hope and brought it up to date. So it was very similar in style and content, reestablishing those characters as heart and soul and this. And so his take was go back to the grassroots of the Turtles, that first Turtle movie, and then just expand on it a little bit, but start the universe from there, and also do it as people in costumes with CG assists. So, and we had gone as far as had many, many meetings with Brian Henson, Jim Henson's son, who took over the company after he passed away, to build the costumes and do that stuff. But I would go traditional, and you could do, you know, it's like there isn't a movie or practically TV show made these days that doesn't have some kind of a computer assist or effects and things, but you could add elements to make it a little bit cooler. But I would go, you know, back to the core, heart and soul, family, martial arts. That was what that movie did back then. It was a martial arts based movie. The whole concept was based on that. So it would be straight back to basics and make it solid, good movie for all ages.
You can come grab a mask as well. All right, we're back up here.
I have two questions for you.
Sure.
So first of all, why do you think the turtles became so popular? And then my second question is, if you had a pizza with the turtles, what toppings would you put on your pizza?
My favorite pizza of all time is Hawaiian pizza with jalapenos. It's like, you know, and I eat a lot of pizza, but no, I like the salty sweet of a Hawaiian pizza, but you put jalapenos on it, it's a little bit of spice, it's perfect. But I eat anything, any pizza.
What about you for pizza? Pepperoni
pretty
cheese.
Straight up the middle.
You can't go wrong with pepperoni cheese, though.
But no, it's because we, you know, even when, in the early days y'all started buying the original black and white comic books and stuff like that, and people would be like, you know, even my parents would be like, what the hell? You know, it's like, why do people like these things? You know, and we were so thrilled you did, trust me. But no, it was, and as it became more successful and more mainstream, there would be, reporters and things that would ask, they'd be like, I don't get it. What is it? And to me, it was like, you know, first and foremost, you can't tell young people what's cool and what's not. You can't, you know, we all decide what we like and what we don't, and nobody, that's that. We felt that, and one of the things I love is that I don't care what color you are, what part of the world you're from, whether you speak English or not. It's like, you know, you can come up to the table and I'll ask you who your favorite turtle is, and you have a favorite turtle. We don't alienate anybody. You can be, they're green mutated teenagers, so you can pick your favorite turtle and identify with them, character traits and things like that. I think whether you have a family, and I don't know what you guys, what your families are like. My family's mental; they're crazy. but it's our family. We love each other. We fight, but we all love each other. And when the chips are down or when you really need each other, you support each other. And even if you don't have a family, it might be where you work, you have an adoptive family. The people you work with become your friends or your people that are your stand by you. So I feel like you have that heart and soul and family aspect. And then I think at the end of the day, it's like we just want to go about our lives and be normal people, whether it be teenagers or young adults or adults. But we also feel that life is tough, and when things get tough, you want to do the right thing. And so we like that hero part in all of our characters and stuff. So I think it's just kind of a combination, and that's, you know, I guess how much I break it down. But I just, you know, I just like them, and that's sometimes good enough. But it is sort of, you try to analyze it, and there's a lot of things that I find interesting and fascinating about it. But I just like them.
That's it.
You grab a mask too.
Thank you. Hey, Toka.
Hey there. Paralleling the gentleman's last movie comment.
Yes.
The Jim Henson Company is doing the new Dark Crystal, if you haven't seen it.
I can't wait.
Yeah, so we've got a lot of hybrid stuff going on nowadays, so a nice digital blend of puppetry and, you know, CGA stuff.
It's really
so
cutting.
So that might be something for Paramount to keep in mind.
I'd love to.
But my question would be, which mutant animal do you identify with the most?
Pigeon Pete. Hi, I'm Pete. I love the Machanimals are such a fascinating, I mean, they evolved out of, yeah, I really love them. They evolved out of the some of the early role-playing games, which then were firmly established within the Archie series, and then became their thing. But we, you know, when we brought, you know, and I think those came in a big way in the IDW series, which was fantastic. But I love it. It's it's tough. I like them all. Man Ray is really cool. Slash, of course, is great. Woo! It's like, he's great. But no, it's like every time, especially Mateus Santuculo, one of the artists that works, every time he draws Pigeon Pete, it makes me laugh out loud because it's so crazy. So, like, thanks. Good question, bro. Thank
grab
you.
A mask, too. All right, I think we got time for one or two more. We're getting the sign back there. All right. Uh-oh.
So what was your inspiration for Bebop and Rocksteady?
Oh, that's a great question. Bebop and Rocksteady came about as part early on in the role-playing game. The first expansion to the Turtle universe we did was probably 85 into early 86, is that we had a company approach us to do a role-playing game. And, you know, of course, in a role-playing game, you need to have lots of different kind of characters that you could either align with or do battle against. And there'd be lots of dice points and things you had to, strategy you had to figure out. So we had a mutant rhino and a mutant warthog as one of, I think, probably 25 or 30 different mutated characters that we did. And so when we'd established sort of them as part of the Turtle universe, but mostly when we started developing the animated series, we really needed... And they weren't supposed to be as completely goofy as they were, the comic relief they were in the animated series, but they were created to be the heavies and be henchmen of Shredder, but we had too much fun with them being a little bit on the goofy side. So, but I love them. I love them even, because, you know, even Krang started as a race of Krang, Utroms we call them, and then it became this one singular thing, and it just cracks me up. I love Krang from the early animated series.
Good one. You can come get a mask, too. All right. Then probably last questions being passed down over there. Which one we got? You got?
Fox,
oh, wait,
great.
That one's broken. Here, try that one. There you go.
Thank you.
Do I have to? When you were younger, did you want to be an artist, or did you just decide it when you get older?
Good, really good question. Thank you. No, I was... I made my parents worry a lot. As I would draw, if I had a crayon or something, I would draw on anything and everything in the house. I'd draw on the walls, and I'd draw on this, and my mother would be like, "What's wrong with you?" But I loved art, and my grandmother was a painter. She used to do watercolors, and my dad used to doodle, so it was kind of inherited. But I remember specifically that I read so many comic books when I was younger, they did think there was something seriously wrong with me. Especially when I told them I'm going to be Jack Kirby. Jack Kirby was one of my heroes who created most of the Marvel Universe. And I told them I'm going to be Jack Kirby when I grow up. And they were like, "We're going to have one of those kids that never moves out of the basement." I know it. But it's always been something I always wanted to do. And even because people said, if you didn't create the Turtles, would you still be writing and drawing? And I would still be doing something in comics because I love it too much. It's just such a great medium to, and that's what I tell young people. If you like writing and drawing and you are, you know, aspiring to be an artist, the great thing if you can write and draw your own stories, even if, you know, just if you're having fun with it, that's even more important. But if you can do both, then anything you can imagine, you can go there. You can go past, present, future. You can create a story and create characters and go to your own worlds and your own universe and just have a blast. And it doesn't have to be to the benefit of anybody but yourself. And it's fun. And it's a great thing. Awesome. Great question. Thank you, Darlene.
Yeah, great question. And don't forget to get a mask when we get closed out of here. But that's, I think we all have a million more questions. But let's give a round of applause for everybody that asked questions to and everything. If you want to keep talking, you want to check out some of the stuff like the cool hat and everything you mentioned, if you go downstairs just across from Artist Alley is where he's set up. Be here, yeah, all the rest of the weekend for sure. So one more time, everybody, for Kevin Eastman. All right, y'all have a great weekend.
Well, listen, thank you, Colorado Springs. It's an honor to be here, and I have to say again that I have the best job in the world because I have the best fans in the world. So.
Without